Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, making connections. New habitat. Sachs food truck relocates to Habitat for Humanity Restore. This article is by Garrett Karsten from Decatur. Ronnie Franklin hopes that others can benefit from the Decatur Area Habitat for Humanity as much as he did. Franklin, 52, and his wife, LaShawn, 42, built their Decatur home with Habitat in 2014. Now he's using his own business, Sachs Food Truck, to help raise awareness of the organization. "We're really looking to serve the community," Franklin said. "We love doing what we do." Friday and Saturday were Sachs's first 2 days of operating at its new permanent location in the parking lot of the Habitat for Humanity Restore, 932 East Wood Street, which sells donated items to help fund Habitat's affordable housing program. The menu has turkey, burgers, and rib dishes assembled in some unique ways. One item, the giblet burger, is a smoked patty served on top of fries with Franklin's homemade barbecue sauce and white queso cheese. Friday was rather slow, which we anticipated, but Saturday it picked up, he said, of the first 2 days, anticipating business to grow through word of mouth. It was pretty good. The truck will serve food from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursday through Saturday. This past weekend wasn't the first time Decatur residents have tasted Franklin's food. Sachs's opened for the first time at a Springfield Food Truck Festival in 2016, the second being the same year at the Decatur Celebration. "That year we won first in taste and second in first time running business," he said, referencing the 2016 Decatur Celebration. "Since then, we've come up with the turkey tips, jerk turkey tacos, the jerk fries, the jerk turkey tenderloin." Franklin said customers over the years like an extra side, his homemade barbecue sauce, something he perfected by tweaking his uncle's homemade recipe with additional herbs and spices. Prior to operating a business of his own, Franklin spent 15 years learning food craft while working for his uncle's catering business in St. Louis. Currently, he's looking to bottle and sell his sauce, preferably through an Illinois-based vendor. According to Franklin, the decision to operate his truck in the Restore parking lot is a way for him to give back to the community, crediting the collaboration to a friendship he formed with Ed Smith, executive director of Habitat. Smith started with Habitat as a volunteer in 2014 and helped Franklin and his wife build their home. Shortly after the house was complete in 2015, around the time Smith became executive director, the two began discussing a way they could collaborate. Franklin said they pulled the trigger in 2020 after COVID-19 restrictions were limiting where Sachs could operate. Smith and Franklin shared a similar hope that food truck customers can lead to new members of the community becoming involved with Habitat, donors and clients alike. In order to help promote new opportunities, all customers purchasing food from Sachs will receive a 10% off coupon to the Restore. "We were looking at a way to draw some people into the store, you know, maybe get some people in here for the first time," Smith said. "Hopefully that can lead to other things." And there are some really great pictures here associated. They're making me hungry just looking at them. Franklin holds a giant turkey leg, a new addition to the Sachs food truck menu, which also includes turkey tips, jerk turkey tacos, the jerk fries, and jerk turkey tenderloin. And there's a photo of the interior of the Habitat Restore. Habitat Restore offers a variety of household items for sale, the proceeds of which are used to help fund the affordable housing program. And large photo on the front page, Ronnie Franklin, left, owner of Saks Food Truck, and Ed Smith, executive director of the Decatur Area Habitat for Humanity, are collaborating to bring more attention to the organization by having Franklin set up shop in the Restore parking lot on Thursday through Saturday. And Franklin standing in front of the Saks It's Just That Good food truck, and Smith standing in front of the Habitat Restore truck. On to Decatur government. Emergency orders now part of city code. This article is by Valerie Wells from Decatur. The Decatur City Council on Monday approved the insertion into city code provisions of Mayor Julie Moore Wolf's emergency orders. The orders, which target specific businesses and functions for potential enforcement, carry the possibility of a business losing its license if that license was issued by the city, if guidelines on wearing masks and social distancing are not followed. Moore Wolf announced the emergency orders at a news conference on July 27th, along with the news that Macon County had seen a rise in COVID-19 cases over the weekend of July 24th through 26th. At that news conference, the mayor said she did not want the city to become the mask patrol, and she did not want to have to ask the Liquor Commission to suspend or revoke the license of businesses who are already in difficulty due to the restrictions of COVID-19. However, if a business is not complying, she said, it would be the only recourse. The Macon County Health Department holds the responsibility of investigating complaints of restaurants and food service establishments. The city issues liquor licenses. The ordinance requires bars and restaurants to maintain a 6-foot distance between tables, patrons, and serving areas, that all employees wear face coverings, that a barrier be erected between musical performers and the audience, and that the performers themselves maintain a 6-foot distance from each other and wear face coverings while performing, that customers wear masks until they reach their table and unless they are actively eating or drinking, and that they wear their masks if they leave their table for any reason, and that external suppliers wear masks. The only exception is a medical disability that prevents a person from wearing a mask safely. Parties at the same table cannot exceed 10 people, and patrons who are not within the same party must maintain 6-foot distance from other people. While the ordinances don't say specifically that they are temporary, City Manager Scott Wrighton said they will continue to be in effect as long as state restrictions imposed by Governor J.B. Pritzker continue. There are 2 ordinances because they cover establishments that serve alcohol and those who don't, Wrighton said. And in order to cover both, 2 separate chapters of the city code, both licensing and alcoholic beverage establishments, had to be amended. Otherwise, the ordinances are nearly identical. Last week, the mayor issued a proclamation because COVID cases increased, and we believe most are occurring at large social gatherings, eating and drinking establishments, he said. These ordinances provide additional ways to make sure those places of business follow the rules. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory voted against the measure, as did Councilman Bill Faber. Both expressed concern that the ordinance would hurt businesses and erode the community's trust in the council. I believe the city and the health department already have the necessary tools needed to ensure mask compliance within a business these ordinances would impact, Gregory said. In other business, the council approved an ordinance calling for a good faith effort for minority business enterprises to be awarded a minimum of 10% of city projects, with 18% of the work to be performed by minority employees. Bonuses can be awarded to contractors who meet or exceed a 20% amount of work done by minority business enterprises, which is a business owned and controlled by minority persons who control management and daily operations. A second vote was held to change City Council policy to match. Both passed unanimously. The council also approved a $2,959,000 contract with Felmley Dickerson of Bloomington for the construction of Fire Station 3, which will move a couple blocks north from its current location at 1308 West El Dorado Street to Fairview Plaza. As part of the contract, it was noted that Felmley Dickerson will employ the services of at least two minority contractors that will provide a minimum of 18% of the contracted work. Okay. We're on to page A3, local and state police car hijacked with kids inside, woman jailed. This article's by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police say a Decatur woman hijacked a vehicle Sunday night with two young children inside in an attempt to flee police. Court documents say police officers initially responded to reports of a woman who appeared to be under the influence of narcotics attempting to get in people's vehicles around 9:58 p.m. Police found the 31-year-old near the 300 block of South Main Street area acting erratic and irrational, screaming someone tried to kidnap her while continually pointing at an apartment building at the corner of Monroe and Macon Streets, documents say. Moments later, the woman ran north along Monroe into moving traffic and stopped a moving vehicle, according to police. A sworn affidavit says the woman got into the driver's seat through the front door after the 25-year-old female driver stepped out. The woman's two sons, aged 6 and 7, were still inside. The affidavit says a nearby officer got into the passenger side of the car just as the woman began to drive in reverse and stopped the vehicle by turning off the keys. The officer then opened the driver's door, pushed her out of the vehicle, and took her into custody after a brief foot chase. She was arrested and booked into Macon County Jail on Monday morning on preliminary charges of vehicular hijacking, endangering the life of a child, and resisting a peace officer. The charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A check of jail records Monday afternoon showed bail was set at $55,000 and $5,500 bond is required for release. Photo here. On the move, Kyle Manley, left of Adams Memorials, sets a segment of the Mount Zion Donor Monument as Andrew Helton keeps it steady on Monday near the intersection of Broadway and North Streets in Mount Zion. The refurbished memorial, which includes the names of local businesses and families that contributed to a fundraiser for the Mount Zion Economic Development Commission, was previously located at the intersection of Broadway and West Main Street. The monument was erected as part of a planned $1.3 million upgrade to Broadway. Pritzker warns of deep cuts. Governor federal aid needed after revenues plunge due to COVID. Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker said Monday that Illinois faces the prospect of having to make deep spending cuts over the rest of the fiscal year if Congress does not pass an economic relief package that helps states make up for the massive loss in revenue that they've seen since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. I continue to do my part to make calls to make sure that people understand that Republican-led states and Democratic-led states all have this challenge of revenues that fell off a cliff because of COVID-19, Pritzker said during a news conference in Springfield. COVID-19 first appeared in Illinois in January, and it quickly spread to all corners of the state, prompting Pritzker to issue a stay-at-home order that virtually shut down major segments of the economy. Similar economic restrictions were imposed in other states, although many were less strict than those in Illinois. As a result, base revenues flowing into state coffers fell during the fiscal year that ended June 30th by a little more than $1.1 billion. In May, state lawmakers passed a budget for the new fiscal year that began July 1st. That budget was roughly $5 billion out of balance compared to revenue estimates available at the time, but the plan was to fill the gap by borrowing from the Federal Reserve and by passage of a proposed constitutional amendment to allow the state to levy a graduated income tax that would impose higher tax rates on higher levels of income. The budget authorized borrowing, roughly $4.5 billion, through the Federal Reserve's Municipal Liquidity Facility, something that the Fed Board approved earlier this year as a way to help state and large local governments make up for the loss of revenue they've seen. In Illinois, the plan was to borrow that money and pay it back with aid that lawmakers expected Congress to approve. Republicans in the General Assembly argued against that plan, saying it would be unwise to rely on short-term borrowing to balance the budget, especially when it was still unknown what, if any, kind of relief package Congress would authorize in the future. But Democrats argued that using the Federal Reserve Credit Program was the best option available because it enabled the state to continue spending and spurring economic activity at a time when businesses and consumers couldn't. Now, as negotiations between the Democratic-led U.S. House and Republican-led U.S. Senate have dragged on, many observers say it looks increasingly less likely that the next economic relief package will include aid to states. There's a photo here at a news conference Monday in Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker warns that deep spending cuts and layoffs will result in Illinois and nationwide if Congress does not approve a coronavirus relief package that includes aid to state and local governments that have seen sharp revenue declines during the pandemic. U of I to require two COVID tests weekly, saliva-based testing to begin August 16th for those in classrooms. Articles by Alyssa Cherney, Chicago Tribune, Champaign. Students and faculty participating in face-to-face classes at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign this fall must be tested for COVID-19 twice a week, the university announced Monday. The mandatory saliva-based testing, developed by UIUC researchers, will begin for students on August 16th, a week before classes are set to start. About one-third of the classes at that campus will be fully in-person or include in-person components, while the rest, including large lecture courses, will be offered remotely, according to spokeswoman Robin Kaler. If everyone does their part to maximize the safety of our entire community, we have the ability to provide modified in-person delivery of our missions, Chancellor Robert Jones said in a news release. The new details help outline UIUC's strategy for restarting some educational activities on campus while also adapting to the coronavirus pandemic. As part of the new rules, students or faculty planning to visit campus for any reason this fall, such as grabbing supplies from a building, must first get tested and receive their results no more than 4 days prior to arriving. Those who test positive for COVID-19 must quarantine for 14 days, either in campus dorms that have been set aside for this use or in an off-campus residence. Though numbers are not finalized, Kaler said the school estimates there will be anywhere from 5,000 to 15,000 fewer students on campus this fall compared to a regular semester. Fall 2019 enrollment at UIUC, the state's largest university, reached nearly 52,000 students. Kaler said she expects residence halls to house 8,300 students in the fall, about 700 less than usual. Students opting to live on campus do not need to live in single dorm rooms, but had the option to request it. The school said it will work with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District on contact tracing for any cases linked to the university. Additionally, students and staff will need to complete an online COVID-19 safety training before the start of classes and wear face masks while in public settings on campus. Following the lead of other colleges that shifted the last few weeks of classes to online only, UIUC said Monday that final exams and instruction will be provided remotely after November 20th. The move is meant to limit travel to and from campus following the Thanksgiving break. We continue with local and state on page A5. Illinois AG files brief against Florida voting law. Raul and other AGs support suit against pay-to-vote measure. This article's by Raymond Troncoso, Capital Illinois, or Capital News Illinois, Springfield. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul was co-lead on a court brief filed Monday by a coalition of 20 attorneys general in opposition to a Florida law that makes it more difficult for previously incarcerated individuals to vote, according to his office. Raoul and Washington, D.C. Attorney General Carl A. Racine led the group that filed an amicus brief in federal court supporting a lawsuit challenging a Florida law that prevents previously incarcerated residents from voting unless they pay all legal financial obligations tied to their sentence. In a news release distributed Monday to announce the filing, Raoul called Florida's law a poll tax, which was a Jim Crow-era policy intended to keep black Americans from voting. Pay-to-vote laws are discriminatory and serve mainly to suppress black and other minority voters, Raoul said in the news release. I will continue to fight discrimination in any form, which includes ensuring that people who have completed their sentences regain their fundamental voting rights. The coalition's filing posed three arguments: that the law harms low-income residents and does not encourage payment, that it disproportionately impacts black and Latino communities, and that expanding voting rights for those previously incarcerated promotes reintegration and public safety. Florida voters approved a state constitutional amendment in 2018 that automatically restored voting rights to felons who completed all terms of their sentence, including parole or probation. The Florida legislature later added the financial obligations to the law, but a federal judge blocked the enforcement of those restrictions. In July, however, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that decision and issued a temporary order blocking felons who have not paid those obligations from registering or voting. In an unsigned order in July, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to block the law. The majority did not release a written explanation, but Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Elena Kagan authored a dissent citing disenfranchisement close to an election. In brief, nearly 40 people shot in Chicago over weekend. As the most violent month in 28 years came to a close. At least 107 people were killed in July, more than double the same month last year, according to data kept by the Chicago Tribune. That's the most homicides the city has seen in a single month since September of 1992, when 109 were recorded. Most of the people died from gunshot wounds, but at least 6 people died from stabbings, 3 from strangulation, 2 from child abuse, and 2 from assault, according to Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. At least 570 people were shot during the month, about 250 more than July of last year, according to the Tribune's data. The youngest gun violence victims were 7-year-old Natalia Wallace, who was shot as her family celebrated the 4th of July in the South Austin neighborhood, and 9-year-old Janari Andre Ricks, who was shot while playing with friends behind the Cabrini Greens townhomes on Friday. Others included a 17-year-old activist, Caleb Reed, who died Sunday, 2 days after he was shot in the West Rogers Park neighborhood. Less than 2 months ago, he publicly spoke out about removing officers from Chicago public schools and spending that money on mental health and other services for students. Mega Replay in Decatur closing. Decatur. Mega Replay, which sells pre-owned video games, DVDs, and electronics, is closing its Decatur location. The store is at 4210 Prospect Drive. Its last day will be August 16th, the store posted on Facebook. We appreciate all of your support over the last 12 years and hope to continue serving you at our Bloomington location, the Facebook post said. Okay, just looking for our next article. There's a page A7 news, Herald and Review Almanac. Today's highlight in history: on August 4th, 1944, 15-year-old diarist Anne Frank was arrested with her sister, parents, and four others by the Gestapo after hiding for 2 years inside a building in Amsterdam. Anne and her sister Margot died at the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. There's a photo here, History Corner, a look back. In 1981, Celia Appenzeller poses with a cigar-making machine used at Michael's. A little piece of visual history there. Pandemic parody to be released in fall, Associated Press, New York. A popular online spoof of the children's favorite Goodnight Moon, reworked for the coronavirus, will be published by Penguin Random House this fall. The Penguin imprint Philomel Books announced Monday that Good Morning Zoom, written by Lindsay Reckler and illustrated by June Park, is scheduled for October 6th. Currently self-published Good Morning Zoom takes Margaret Wise Brown's beloved bedtime story and turns it into a narrative about Zoom, bread baking, homeschooling, and other familiar parts of life during the pandemic. Reckler is a banking executive and mother of two who lives in Manhattan. Park is a graphic designer and illustrator who lives in Brooklyn. All author net proceeds will be donated to coronavirus relief charities. COVID-19 is a difficult topic, especially for young children, Reckler said in a statement. I wanted to tell my children a relatable story, a story that would help them become familiar with their new everyday lives, and within that story, touch upon what was happening in the outside world. I thought a lot about the contrast between quarantining safely inside versus what was happening outside my window. There's an image of the front cover of the book Good Morning Zoom, a parody, words by Lindsay Reckler and pictures by June Park. And this cover image released by Philomel shows Good Morning Zoom, available October 6th. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. Please stay tuned. We'll take a short break. Be right back with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 4th, 2020.